This is Ozarks at Large. The Pryor Center for Oral and Visual History at the University of Arkansas collects Arkansas history. They have collected scores of interviews in the past few years and have an ambitious plan to gather even more conversations in the near future. The center also has a massive archive with the voices of Arkansas history donated by Channel 7 in Little Rock. Recently, Randy Dixon, the director of the Pryor Center, talked to Ozarks at Large's Kyle Kellums about some of that history.
My background is in television news. I've spent my entire career at KATV in Little Rock, the ABC affiliate. I was there for 31 years. The last 10, I was the news director. And in 2009, we worked out with the Pryor Center to donate 26,000 hours of archival footage.
26,000 hours?
Yes, to date back as early as the earliest we found is some film from 1926. It was the second annual Hope Watermelon Festival.
Oh my gosh.
Not sure where it came from, but I've spent the last year and a half before I came to the Pryor Center working with them as a consultant and going through the archives and have found some pretty amazing things. I mean, I worked there my entire career and I'm finding things that I didn't know were there.
And I'm sure it's on all sorts of different things. You mentioned film from the 1920s, and you probably see the history of how television was recorded.
That's right. When I started at KATV, dating myself, I was 19 years old and was hired as the first ever videotape editor. There was this new technology coming into television. They were making the transition from film to tape, and they hired this kid to figure out how to use and manage the videotape. We were on tape number 9 when I started, and then it grew to 26,000. But Jim Pitcock, who was the news director at the time, was very forward-thinking, knowing that the film was valuable and eventually would not be able to be used. So he built reels, spent several years transferring film from the 50s, 60s, and 70s on transferring them to these videotapes. Well, now the videotapes are very old, and we are in the process of digitizing the videotapes before they're damaged to the point, because of age, that they won't play, and we're saving that. And then the plan is to eventually have it available on the Pryor Center website in a searchable format that anyone can view it, anyone in the world.
Is it safe to say almost everything that's been covered by Channel 7 News is involved in this collection?
Yes.
Everything...
Well, everything post-1960. In 1960, there was a fire, burned Channel 7 to the ground. The studios took all that film with them. But there is previous material to that that was collected after the fact.
Well, that brings us to kind of what we're talking about today, which is from time to time, you're going to come in and we're going to listen to some Arkansas history.
Sure.
And we thought we'd start this off with just kind of an overview of what we're talking about.
This first one blew me away when I found it.
This is Bear Bryant.
Mm-hmm.
And this is...
This was an interview that was done in 1967. He was in the state, and he just mentioned sort of matter-of-factly that he almost coached at Arkansas.
But in 1950, I believe, or 1951 or 2, I had verbally accepted the job at the University of Arkansas and honestly meant to go. I had no idea that Kentucky would refuse to let me go. And when I went back, we stayed in session with the committee and the board all day until after midnight. And John Barnhill was on his way, I think, to Louisville to meet me the next day. And then when they just wouldn't release me. And then a lot of people in Arkansas thought I was using that for prize or something, that I had no intention of coming. But I really meant to come. I'd already talked to my staff about it and told them I was coming. And everybody thought I got a raise at Kentucky for not coming, but that's not true. All I did make them mad.
Okay, you and I are both big sports fans,
mm-hmm.
And before we heard this, we had no idea that Bear Bryant was minutes away.
Didn't have a clue.
From being the coach at Arkansas.
Right.
Wow.
Pretty amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now,
this next one you really like, right?
Yes, because Dizzy Dean is an Arkansas native.
Right.
And it
a legend.
Yes, it predates me, but I did know that he was, after his playing career, which was ended kind of abruptly after he had an accident in the All-Star game.
Mm-hmm.
He slid into second stealing a base. Imagine a pitcher stealing a base in an All-Star game. That would never happen now. But he was beloved as a television announcer on the Game of the Week by everyone except English teachers.
Exactly.
And he talks about that here.
Do you still get letters from English teachers back when, of course, you were broadcasting and telecasting nationwide? I know you still do some of that, but they complain so much about the language that you used. Have you improved your English, Diz, or not?
Well, you know, I was broadcasting the ball game here not too long ago, and there's a Spanish broadcast going on. And when I got through with our broadcast, they asked me to come over to be their guest. And there was two Spanish guys there talking Spanish back to, in Texas, and Spanish people broadcasting a ball game. And they says, now we're going to bring Dizzy Dean in here. And I walked in there and sat down, Bud. And they says, Dizzy, do you speak a Spanish? I says, partner, I don't even speak good English.
The word I remember most, I guess, was slud instead of slid.
That's right, Bud. I use slud all the time, and I use ain't. Like Will Rogers once said, a lot of people don't say ain't eating regular, and I'm going to keep on saying ain't.
Actually, though, you always knew better, didn't you?
No, that's the only way I was raised. After all, I didn't have an education. And, you know, slud, when I got the letters from the school teachers about slud, you know, slud is in the old English dictionary, which I didn't know, but someone told me and sent it to me, you know, and said the slud is in the old English dictionary. And it meant that a fellow's hit the dirt, he slid into a mass of mud.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I use. But I didn't know that. But that's my lingo. And the way I said, if a fellow slid, he slid into home, he slid into third. And that's the way I broadcast the ball game.
Now,
what a character.
Yeah, and the other voice we heard there.
Bud Campbell.
Bud
legendary.
Campbell, yes. And Bud tries to give Dizzy Dean that out. Well, you knew better.
Yeah, no. Nope, really didn't. Speaking of Bud,
yes.
You know, he did some ABC broadcasts, regional broadcasts, and they loved him at ABC Sports. And whenever they would come to town to cover the Razorbacks, Channel 7 would throw this big party. Well, one year, Howard Cosell came, who loved to give Bud a hard time, and he spoke at the Pleasant Valley Country Club at a dinner in 1972.
I do want to say one thing about Bud Campbell. Known him a lot of years. Mediocrity always seeks its own level. There's absolutely no question in our mind in the headquarters in New York, Bud, that given the right opportunity and the right business, you've got a future. But all kidding aside, we're very proud of Bud Campbell. We know he's the voice of the Razorbacks. We know he's probably the most identifiable broadcast voice in the state of Arkansas. We're very, very pleased with the fact that he does regional NCAA football for us. So notwithstanding your earlier palpably satirical, deleterious comments concerning me, Bud, it's a delight to have you next to me.
1972, that's when Cosell was as famous.
Oh,
he was at
huge.
His
Monday Night Football
peak.
And
yeah.
All that.
He had his own talk show. And
oh, that's right. I'd forgotten about that.
You know, and he would famously on Wide World of Sports would interview Muhammad Ali.
Mm-hmm. And get into it with
yes,
him.
Yes. At least there's always been debate whether it was,
sure.
You know, staged somewhat.
Right.
But speaking of Ali, he mm-hmm. came to Arkansas.
Yes, he was passing through, and Channel 7 talked to him.
I would say as I come face-to-face with people, I have many admirers and fans in the black and the white race here in Arkansas, Mississippi, Georgia, New York, Florida. I see no difference in the people. I sign as many or more autographs now than I ever have. But I would say that a few boxing officials have did a few things that was not justified, and a few judges in courts and I would say juries, but it's not the people as a whole. It's just a few in power that I would say runs the structure, but it's not the people. All the people are with me.
That was 1969.
Yeah, so we're at the, you know, in the middle of the civil rights
exactly.
Struggle. And Muhammad Ali, do you know why he was in Little Rock?
I have no idea.
Just
it just was passing through, apparently.
Yeah. Now, we've heard from some sports figures, but there's a lot of politicians.
A lot of politics. This next one is a classic. It's from January of 1967. Winthrop Rockefeller had just been sworn in as the new governor, had defeated Orville Faubus, and while Rockefeller was getting all the attention. Jim Pitcock, who was the reporter at the time, saw Faubus. He had just quietly, alone, walked out of his office and was walking down the steps of the Capitol, leaving.
These are the first few seconds of Faubus after a dozen years.
Right.
Not being governor.
I leave with some sadness, but without any second thoughts about my decision. I leave with relief that I can lay down the burdens which I've had to bear for 12 years, all the many problems, all the many things that needed to be done, and we've accomplished some of them, but it's never, you're never in government able to satisfy everyone or do all the things that should be done. So those are the feelings I have as I leave, the same as I had anticipated.
Governor, you were talking about burdens. What do you consider your heaviest burden in office?
Well, the effort to keep a good administration, to guard against weakness among all of your people, and the temptations and the persuasions that are put in their way. Some have a tendency, you know, to become a little too egotistical when they get a position. Others lose their zest for the job after a while and begin to think about doing more for themselves than for the people whom they serve. But I think I've kept this to a minimum in my administration, and yet it's always a struggle to prevent weakness, defections, yielding to temptation and pressures.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, that's more than 10 years after the Central High Crisis.
Mm-hmm. And he was still referring to it.
Right.
He made the right decision. He
was not going to back off of
it. He was not going to. Now, I don't think he ever did.
Now, this next one that you have,
mm-hmm.
from 1968, right?
Right. This one had to go in there. This is a young congressman by the name of David Pryor, interviewed in Washington regarding the budget deficit.
Some things never change, right?
Well, and just wait, it's kind of ironic.
I do think that we've got to face the facts that we have a $29 billion deficit that we're going into in this fiscal year. I do think that we've got to realize that we can't, as a government, go out here and successfully borrow $29 billion without it causing some inflation. But I do think, too, on the other hand, that the taxpayers of America are at their point now of almost no return taxation-wise. The president, in my estimation, is shooting for a 10% tax increase with the possibilities of hoping to get, say, a 6 to 8% increase. But right now, I think he's got tough sledding. And at this point, and unless they can show me we're in a very critical stage of a national emergency, I am at this point not going to vote for the tax increase.
Oh, the good old days.
$29 billion.
Just in the billions.
Yeah.
And speaking of Democrats and politics, this is where the entertainment and the politics crossed over just a little bit. Glenn Campbell in 69, you know, was in True Grit.
Right.
They held a premiere at the Cinema 150 in Little Rock, and at the last minute, somehow it became a Democratic Party fundraiser and caused a little bit of controversy.
I was asked to do the premiere by Paramount, and I didn't know about the controversial stuff until like couple of weeks ago.
How do you feel about being back here, world premiere at home?
Great, I really do. I never thought to, when I used to go pick cotton to get enough money to go see a show, I never thought I'd be making one, and it's really a great thrill.
What's your own political affiliation? You're a Republican?
I'm a registered Democrat, but I leaned the other way the last time. I think almost everyone in Arkansas is a registered Democrat, aren't they?
Not anymore.
No. that was from 1969 at the premiere of True Grit.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Senator John McClellan.
Yes.
Who was in the Senate for a long time until he was defeated by Pryor, right?
Yes.
Yeah, in the Democratic primary.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And this one is from the dedication of something that many people are aware of.
Yeah, the McClellan Kerr navigation system.
Yeah.
Generations yet unborn will benefit from the prosperity which this program will bring to the Arkansas River Valley. Now that this great waterway is completed and in operation, we are crossing the threshold of a new area to an area of progress, unprecedented progress, in the Arkansas River Valley.
And that was 72.
Yeah, and the McClellan Kerr...
navigation system.
I mean, that's something that is kind of taken for granted now. It's hard to remember.
It was landmark. It was huge.
And there was the namesake, or one of the two namesakes.
Mm-hmm. And in Oklahoma, it's known as the Kerr McClellan, isn't
right,
it?
Right, yeah, right.
Because he was the senator from Oklahoma. His colleague, Senator Fulbright, in 74, was very outspoken, not only about the Vietnam War, but about Richard Nixon.
To me, he has no alternative. We have none but for him and his vice president to resign. Now, I want to say again, I want it very clear, that if the president is able to reestablish his leadership and to create some confidence in his capacity to govern, especially in the Congress, then of course, all right, more power to him. That's what we have to have. And I'd be very delighted to see him do it. But now there is little to indicate he's going to do it.
That was in front of an AFL-CIO audience.
Mm-hmm. Talking about a man who was speaking his mind.
Right. And that was during his last term, because a young Dale Bumpers would then...
Right, defeat him.
Right.
You know, I grew up seeing these politicians, assuming that everyone was that well-spoken and that brilliant. And you just, as Arkansans, you take that for granted.
Oh, we had these generations. I mean, we don't have tape of Joe T. Robinson.
But right.
From Joe T. Robinson through generation after candidate.
Wilbur
after,
Mills.
Right.
And then you come to Bumpers and Pryor and
Clinton. Right.
To top it off.
Speaking of native sons, William Fulbright, of course, a native of Fayetteville. Here is perhaps, other than Bill Clinton, the most famous son Arkansas has produced.
You think?
Louis Jordan, Johnny Cash,
yeah.
Bill Clinton.
Yeah.
I mean, you know.
I'd say.
Yeah. Okay, let's.
This was in 1974, and he returned to a big homecoming in Kingsland.
I wish I could stay more than just a few minutes, though. I had just about 5 minutes to walk down that country road past where my house was, where I was born. I had to get back on the bus and come get on the train, but I've seen all the people I knew. You know, they were all around there. It's always good to see the old faces. And it's something how all the places seem so much smaller when you go back. You know, like you go back to your old home place, everything seems so much smaller.
And then he did a live concert down at Cummins Prison that was broadcast. I'll have to bring that in sometime.
Oh, yeah.
It was broadcast by KATV, and we have the entire concert. Yes.
Wow. Wow.
There's some great material.
Yeah, we're just scratching the surface here.
Mm-hmm.
I mentioned Bill Clinton. I want to hear something from him now. And this is something that he didn't do that often in his political career.
Only twice.
Twice.
And
once kind of expected, once not.
Right. This was the big upset. Frank White in 1980 beat him, and I was actually at Frank White's headquarters that night working for Channel 7. And it came as such a shock that the concession speech didn't actually take place until the next day.
I want you to know today that I consider myself to be among the most fortunate people in this country. I grew up in an ordinary working family in this state, was able to go through the public schools and become attorney general and governor and serve people in the way that I had always wanted to since I was a boy. I regret that I will not have 2 more years to serve as governor because I have loved it. I have probably loved it as much as any person who ever had this office.
And then came back 2 years later and taped a commercial. I'll bring that next time.
Okay.
And we always referred to it as the I'm Sorry ad, where he actually, because Frank White beat him on, he pushed two topics, Cubans and car tags.
Right.
It was the Cuban refugees at Fort Chaffee
and
raising the price on car tags.
So there's one more here, and this is from 1963, and this might give you goosebumps.
It does. It's actually the dedication of the Greer's Ferry Dam, and it took place in October of 63.
I appreciate this opportunity to come here and join you in dedicating this great resource of our country as well as this district as well as this state. This is a great country that was given to us, and a great land. It's our job, it seems to me, to make the most of it, to make sure that we, in our time, plant our forests, use our water, develop our power, provide recreation for our people, do in our time, to the extent that we can, what Franklin Roosevelt did in his time, and before him, what Theodore Roosevelt did in their time.
49 and a half years ago, just a month.
Right.
Before he would be assassinated.
That's right.
At the Greer's Ferry Dam dedication. What do you think when you're listening to all of this?
I'm fascinated. I just can't believe that we still have this, and I'm just so glad that we do, and I'm ready to share it. This is an ongoing process of the Pryor Center, along with what we also do, which is collect interviews and stories of Arkansans.
And you're going to be doing more of that.
Yes.
You got a bus coming.
The Arkansas Story Bus is on the table. We're planning it, and
right.
It will travel the state and collect interviews. The idea is much like NPR's StoryCorps, except a TV version, an HD television version. But say we set up in a town and you want to interview your grandmother or your father, you come in and sign up. You can come into our mobile studio and you conduct the interview yourself, have them tell their stories. When you finish, we give you a copy to keep for your family, and then the Pryor Center keeps one.
That's great.
Oh, it's going to be wonderful.
And you're going to have more of these.
Yes.
Oh, good. I want to hear that.
Whenever you'll have me, I'll dig some up.
All right. Well, I want to hear that Bill Clinton I'm sorry commercial next time.
Okay.
All right. Thank you.
You got it. Thank you.
Randy Dixon is the director of the Pryor Center for Oral and Visual History at the University of Arkansas. He talked to Ozarks at Large's Kyle Kellums. You can learn more at pryorcenter.uark.edu. Ozarks at Large is underwritten in part by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation.